Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. A haunting in the hub this week. First, the ghost of Big Dig Past.
First and foremost, we have to remove the unsafe panels in the tunnels now. Yesterday, I briefly met with the family of Melinda's family, and I committed to them that I would do everything possible to make sure that this event that occurred on Monday night would not happen again.
That was former head of the Massachusetts Turnpike, Matt Amarello, in July 2006, on the day of the tunnel collapse in the Big Dig. Amarello himself has since fallen. The slow collapse of his life culminated in a drunk driving arrest this week. But who's to blame? The former politician or the political culture that gave rise to the Big Dig itself? That's the question for the ghosts of Big Dig present, all of whom were on the same day haunted Beacon Hill.
The fact that Charlie Baker and his administration, or that administration, was not truthful or straightforward to Congress meant that funding was eventually cut.
He developed and supported the financing scheme for the Big Dig, and that financing scheme starved other projects.
I know why they want to talk about the Big Dig, because they don't want to talk about the mess they've made of the state's finances over the course of the past 4 years.
But of course, it's really the next 4 years that independent Tim Cahill, Governor Deval Patrick, and Republican Charlie Baker are all vying for. So, the governor's race, Matt Amarello, and also a major court case limiting Massachusetts maternity leave to 8 weeks for small businesses. That's all in our Week in Review today. Listeners, do you think Matt Amarello's fall says something about him or about the broader culture of Massachusetts politics? What do you make of the gubernatorial candidates using the Big Dig to score political points? And on the SJC's maternity leave ruling, should the state expand maternity leave from 8 to 12 weeks? What's the solution there? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now is Julie Mahegan, Deputy Editorial Page Editor of the Boston Herald. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Julie.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks.
Also with us is Scott Lehigh, columnist for the Boston Globe. Great to have you, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start with the governor's race. Even though it seems like there's many aspects of the Big Dig we'll never be able to let go of, Julie, do you think that the Big Dig is going to become a major issue in the race?
Well, I think it already has to some extent. I'm actually fascinated by the idea that Governor Patrick is essentially using one of his own weaknesses as a strength, or at least trying to. He hired Jim Aloisi, who was arguably one of the main figures in the Big Dig over the course of the last 25, 30 years.
Who went on to become our Secretary of Transportation.
Correct.
As well.
The governor hired him as a Secretary of Transportation, and Aloisi played a major role in not just in the Big Dig, but in the Turnpike Authority and the perpetuation of the tolls and everything else. So I find it, and he's not the only one that the governor has turned to during the last 4 years of his administration. So I actually find it fascinating that he's turning it around and trying to, hang the Big Dig around Charlie Baker's neck, because a lot of people did think that was going to be a weakness of the governor's campaign.
Scott Lehigh, is there anybody in Massachusetts politics for whom the Big Dig has not touched?
That's a very good question. I can't think of anything. Maybe Richie Neal out there in the western part of the state. No, I mean, it's an issue. It's so complex. It's so easy to demagogue, so easy to make charges on and of course, there's been tragedy associated with it, with the collapse of the ceiling and the death that ensued. So, I mean, and most people don't understand. It's very easy to take the cost figures and make it into frankly, a much bigger overrun and escalation than it was. And so I think it's going to be a political football. Probably through the remainder of the governor's race and maybe a little forward from that. I could say I think the project, I mean, it was sort of shoddily built, but it has been a great thing for Boston. I don't know anyone who would say, well, maybe there are some people, but I would not say, hey, let's go back to the central artery with its horrible elevated, run-in lanes and a sort of a Berlin Wall through the city. So, but it obviously there were big problems with cost and with the shoddy construction of it.
Yeah. Well, Julie Mahegan, I got to ask ask you, so the governor was trying to pin some of the issues around financing of the big dig on Charlie Baker. And, you know, he contends, as we heard in that in the clip earlier, that Baker contends that he wasn't at the State House long enough to play a central role in the big dig. Do you think that that's an effective response? I mean, in the minds of voters, especially.
I think, getting back to my earlier point, I think in some ways this might turn out to be a little bit of a wash. Each of them is going to get a little bit of traction out of this. I don't know that is necessarily the ideal response, which is sort of hands off. The one thing I will say that I think Charlie has responded well on, and I don't know that it's necessarily resonated, which speaks to the issue, is the governor has used the same financing strategy to fund his accelerated bridge program that the Baker and the Weld administration used, you know, borrowing against future federal highway money. But that's a very nuanced explanation. And as Scott said, these things are easy to demagogue. And I don't think that's necessarily going to, it's sort of a, you know, tough argument to make.
Yeah.
Scott, it's a legitimate argument, I think, but it's a tough argument to resonate.
So, Scott, the thing about the big dig and Julie as well, that and it's sort of like coming up again as a major issue that got me is, you know, as you were saying, it did actually transform the city physically for the better. I mean, in parts of the city, you can't, even for those people who don't remember what it was like, it's hard to imagine that there was a highway running through.
It's a terrific project. Yeah.
But on the other hand, it's these remnants, these political remnants, the financing remnants that just never seem to go away. So I'm wondering, do you think that that there will be some resonance, or at least the candidates think that there is some resonance that it's worth fighting for?
Oh, clearly, yeah. And here's what happened under the Weld administration, Slucci administration. They decided at some point, this is a project that its real benefits run north-south, right?
Yeah.
They decided that they didn't want to toll it north-south on 93. So what they wanted to do is they came up with a scheme that, as Julie said, had they essentially borrowed against federal money, and they backed it with by raising the tolls east-west. So they made everyone east-west pay to support the financing for a project that ran north south. I think in some way that's if I live north, so I use it free.
That's,
I would be outraged if I lived in Natick or Wellesley and every day I had to pay for it while people going the other way didn't pay. I mean to me that's a more resonant issue than the cost overruns.
That's
some
a
way.
Point
but,
I was going to
yeah.
get to Scott is that you know it is you can make the argument that yes it's a great quote unquote great project and that people you know benefit by it every day when they're not sitting on the Southeast Expressway heading north.
That's right.
But talk to anybody in Framingham or Natick or Wellesley or Weston and they're going to say great project, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm still paying for it and you
know.
One
of the things Charlie said at the press conference, he said well we did this so the governor would have raised the gas tax to finance it. Well frankly raising the gas tax to finance it would have been a much fairer way to do it than to hike the tolls on the east-west commuters.
The other thing I think though, I don't know how long this is going to last as an issue. I think it's going to be an issue throughout the campaign, but I do think that when you talk to, we joke in the newspaper business about going out and talking to real people, when you talk to real people, they're not talking about the big dig right now. They're not talking about the financing, I mean, unless you live in Metro West, but they're talking about jobs and they're talking about taxes and they're talking about the economy. And I don't know that relitigating the big dig is going to be the dominant issue in the campaign that right now it might look to be.
And especially when candidates have to reach out to more people than just you know, those who drive on the big dig between downtown Boston and Logan.
Yeah,
as you were saying. Well, but there is one more big dig issue that we have to talk about because it was in the news this week, and that, of course, is the arrest on drunk driving charges of former Massachusetts Turnpike head Matt Amarello. Here he is in happier days talking about the triumph of the Big Dig project with Weekend Edition's Scott Simon.
Well, it is an incredible engineering accomplishment here in the city of Boston. We have maintained the operation of the expressway above ground and constructed highway tunnels under the city. It looks like an interstate, only underground.
Well, fast forward to a couple years, and I'm looking at a cover of the Herald here, Julie, with the mugshot from this weekend of Matt Amarello with his eyes closed and a gloved hands of policemen holding his head up. You know, his family says that it, you know, his downfall, his life's downfall, he's got a lot of sad stories to tell since 2006. But it's not really his fault that they're pinning it on Governor Romney.
I don't think you can say anything about this case without saying how terribly sad it is and what a terribly sad outcome it is for both Matt Amarillo and his family. And I wouldn't sort of blame them for any argument that they – that any beef that they had with what led to where he finds himself today. But, you know, the we didn't pull – and we didn't – no, nobody pulled punches on this. He – is not now a public figure, but was the public face of the most expensive public works project in the history of the country. And he, you know, he, frankly, I think a lot of people, what they stop at is they say it's terribly sad, but he didn't just endanger, he didn't endanger the public trust, perhaps, but he was endangering lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of people come down.
Scott?
I echo what you said about being very sad for Matt Amarillo. I got to say, I mean, he was basically a patronage person there at the moving up in the transportation bureaucracy. People have told me before, hey, he was the best we could find at the salary and blah, 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 because he had a different transportation job before he went up to the big dig. I don't think he was qualified for it. And frankly, I think Romney was right to get rid of him. I don't believe you can have a tragedy like it. Wasn't his fault, but I don't believe you can have a tragedy like that without accountability. And I think Romney made the right move on it there.
Let's get a quick call in here. Mark is calling from Duxbury. Welcome to Radio Boston. Mark.
Yes, hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's your thought for today?
Well, just picking up on, I think it was Scott's comment just now, Amarillo wasn't there when the tunnel section was designed. He wasn't there when it was built, but he did take the hit when it fell down, and that was unfair. But, you know, the fact that he has personal problems, I don't think it has anything to do with the central artery or the job. You know, some people, when they fall, they really fall.
Mm-hmm. Mark, thank you so much for your call. Both Julie and Scott, the thing that this really raised in my mind, actually was echoed in a couple columns in the Globe from your colleagues, Joan Vernachie and
Brian
McGrory, about the culture, really, of Massachusetts politics that seems to have given rise to someone like Matt Amarillo, who can go up to a level where he's just not qualified for it.
Here's what, that's kind of a, you know, that's sort of a patronage culture. Here's the misgiving I do have about the thing. I remember years ago someone telling me that when Ed King was defeated for governor in 1982 in the primary, he had a very hard time finding work in the state thereafter because he had become something of a pariah. There was an idea that you really shouldn't be involved with Ed King. And there's some of that. And he was, you know, honorable guy. You agree with him or disagree with him, he wasn't a bad guy. And the same thing might have been true. I just don't know the facts of it. You know, whether Matt Amarillo could not find employment. Some people said he had a very hard time finding employment after getting ousted from the job. Frankly, I'm sure he could have become a lobbyist like every other former state senator. So I'm a little bit dubious on that. But I have heard that, and if that's true, it's very unfortunate because having been fired from this job, I do think Romney had a right to have his own person on a troubled project and to make sure the correctives were going as he wanted. But that shouldn't have made Matt Amarillo unemployable. I'm not certain it did, but I hope it didn't.
Julie, your thoughts on
that?
Well,
I was just going to say, getting back to the point about whether this is a culture that's unique to Massachusetts or Boston politics, whether we sort of build people up only to tear them down and kick them when they're down. Ask Michael Brown from FEMA whether that's unique. I mean, that had nothing to do with Boston. And, you know, you could argue that he played a more direct role in the response to Katrina, but he was basically ousted as a symbolic move. The same thing with Tony Hayward at BP. I think that some people like to say that this is unique to Massachusetts. I completely disagree with that.
Although Tony Hayward did say he wanted to get his life back, and he did.
He got it.
And he felt sorry for the little people down in the Gulf, so maybe that was just desserts. Last quick thing, there was obviously a major case that came out of the Supreme Judicial Court this week about maternity leave in Massachusetts, and that being for small businesses that hire fewer than 50 people, that Massachusetts law only allows for a woman to take up to 8 weeks of maternity leave, and thereafter, employers are allowed to let a woman go if she does take more than 8 weeks. Seems like in this economy, it's something that a lot of small businesses are struggling with, the challenge of letting people go and welcoming them back. So, Julie, your take on the ruling?
Well, I think what's important to point out is that this isn't the SJC deciding that women only should be allowed to take 8 weeks. This is
SJC affirming the law.
It's affirming a law that was passed in 1972, and also it was the SJC reining the Mass Commission Against Discrimination back in a little bit. Just if it's interesting, if you read the ruling, it turns out that the MCAD had sort of gone beyond what was allowed in this legislation in issuing its guidelines about, well, maybe we'll allow men to take this certain or be guaranteed a certain amount of leave, or maybe we'll let it go beyond the 8 weeks. Well, what the SJC said is you can't really do that. You have to pass it in law. But as far as the leave issue itself, I think it's really hard to make the case that 8 weeks is enough for women. But whether we should go beyond and start mandating it, I think you're going to have – that's a really tough row to hoe. Mm-hmm. Businesses have a tough time affording that.
Scott Lehive, larger businesses are covered under the Family Medical Leave Act at the federal level, which allows for up to 12 weeks. I think MCAD's – one of their concerns that they had mentioned was that businesses might say – just small business might say, yes, sure, go ahead, take more time if you want. But then when a woman does, that she would actually lose her job. So that was one of the concerns. But the SJC obviously didn't concur with that.
Yeah, I think this is a good ruling, actually. I mean, this is something that should be decided in the political process. What we do here is we always say more and more and more benefits. Then we say, hey, why don't we have a vibrant business sector? And there's a real tension there. And people tend to forget that you can't, particularly in times like this, heap things on the shoulders of small business. So I think it deserves to be decided not by a commission, but through the legislature. Process with lots of considerations for all the economic issues, and that's essentially what the court said, and I think wisely so.
And well, in the last minute that we've got here, I'm gonna let you share your hubbubs of the week, and in newspaper style, just give us your nut graph on the hubbub. Julie Mahegan,
Steve Lynch, Democratic governor of New Hampshire, showing up his Democratic colleague from down south by telling everyone that the sales tax holiday is a terrible thing and they should all come to New Hampshire. It's going to make for interesting meetings of the Democratic Governors Association. Let's just put it that way.
Permanent sales tax holiday up in New Hampshire.
There you go.
Scott Lehigh, your hubbub?
It would have to be the Fed saying, look, the economy's stalling here, and this is not the recovery we need, and then the market selling off 400 points and this whole sort of shuddering feeling that we're just not getting out of this recession the way we hoped, and there's another shoe that may drop here.
It's John Lynch, the Democratic governor of New Hampshire. I think I made Steve Lynch the governor. Sorry about that.
My hubbub is also a little more serious, but has to do with the tragic death of a cyclist in Brighton who got hit by a car as she was racing down a street. Some eyewitnesses say that maybe she had her iPod on and didn't have a helmet, but it's really unleashed once again a big debate over cycling in Boston, especially at a time where they're trying to encourage more cycling in the city. So we're going to be covering more of that on Radio Boston in the coming days and weeks. Scott Lehigh, columnist for the Boston Globe, thank you so much for being with us here today.
My pleasure.
And Julie Mahegan, deputy editorial page editor for the Boston Herald, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.